Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So I've been asked to speak on Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 5, text 29, which is as follows. You don't know that? You're not supposed to say the Bhagavad Gita. Basic principle. Now it's kind of... Hoktaram yagyatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridang sarva bhutanang yatva mang shantim ritchati. Lord Krishna says, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport, the conditioned souls within the clutches of the illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world. But they do not know the formula for peace which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of all the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Shvetashvatara Upanishad, the Supreme Lord is described as Tamishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are His subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. This fifth chapter is a practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as Karma Yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how Karma Yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with a complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is a path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure soul is the eternal servant of God. As his fragmental part and parcel, he comes into contact with Maya, illusion, due to the desire to lord it over Maya, and that is the cause of his many sufferings. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, for it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage, or Brahma Nirvana. The Eightfold Yoga mysticism is automatically practiced in Krishna consciousness because the ultimate purpose is served. There is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which can alone award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. The subject matter is peace. Actually, the subject matter is Krishna. But this particular verse of Bhagavad Gita describes how we can attain peace by understanding Krishna. People in Chennai are not much interested in peace because they didn't have any bomb blasts here yet. But in many parts of the world, people are living in tension. In the local trains in Bombay, people, in the back of their mind, they're thinking that it might blow up any time. Or you can be walking in the street and there can just be an explosion. So far so good. Chennai is still relatively peaceful. But practically it's only a matter of time because these things are coming everywhere. I remember as a kid growing up in England that we used to be very proud that, well, we don't have shootouts. We don't have... The criminals in England are more civilized than those in America because they don't use guns. They don't shoot people dead. But it didn't last very long. And nowadays, the criminals in England are just as advanced as those in America. So there's no peace. All the bad things are coming. Kali Yuga is rolling on, just in case you didn't notice. Well, that's the point. You don't notice so much. You're in a big illusion that life is more or less wonderful and we'll get our degree and go to America and earn lots of money and be happy. But there's no peace. In America, there's one medicine. Now I forgot the name, but when I was in America, I was hearing the name all the time. Oh, I forgot it. There's some medicine. So many people use it. What's that? Just escaping. I have to go back to America. And then you hear people talking about it all the time. One antidepressant. That's, oh, on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, there's so many people are using this antidepressant medicine that it's just, everyone knows the name. It's like saying jalebi in India. Everyone's heard of jalebi. You don't have to explain what a jalebi is. If you go to America, you have to explain what a jalebi is. They might have a hard time understanding because there's no such thing in America as a jalebi. Where's that mosquito coil? It's an edible mosquito coil. Something like this, but tastier. This wouldn't recommend eating this. Huh? Small size? Well, it depends where you are. Maybe in Chennai, they make them small, but you go to Delhi, you get nice big ones also. So, people are getting money, but there's no peace. Individually. Even there may not, in Chennai, there may not be bomb blasts yet. But there's, individually, people are suffering. This modern life, you're working so hard and you get the prestige of being a highly educated professional Shudra, actually, because at least according to the Vedic concept that if you're employed by someone, then you're a Shudra. So you're all being trained up to become technical Shudras. As Prabhupada said, technology is for Shudras, actually. You see, it's for the most intelligent people. But for the most intelligent people in Vedic culture is the highest tech they would have is a house made or a little cottage made out of mud. Otherwise, just sit under a tree. The most intelligent people don't get involved in the material energy. They're involved with the spiritual energy. But because everything's upside down in Kali Yuga, so we think that one who is highly educated and intelligent, they make more and more machinery, which makes life more and more complex and dangerous. So, modern life is unnatural. We're thinking that we're improving everything by making more and more machines, but it's just making life more and more complex. And what they call a good job, you have to work so hard and then you get ulcers, but never mind, you have enough money to pay the doctor's fees. You earn enough money to pay the doctor's fees. And you can purchase a nice apartment, but you don't have any time to stay there because you're at work all the time. You can buy a nice car so that you can get caught in the traffic jam in a nice car instead of in a share auto. So these are the advantages of having a big brain and going to IIT. But peace, where is peace? People don't know what that is. In the modern age, they're emphasizing non-peacefulness. That you should be very active and music instead of relaxing the mind, it's all for agitating the mind. There you go. Instead of elevating the mind is can be elevated by spiritual music, but this bam, ba bam, ba bam, ba bam, this rock music, it drags one's consciousness down to the lower level, but it gets you, it's good for the rajagun of working hard, but there's no peace. And so people become depressed, they get burnout. In Bangalore, there's one good business. What's that good business? IT, yeah, that's one good business. There's another good business, is mental hospitals. For all the burned out professionals, right? So work hard. What's that? There's some advertisement in Bangalore. Work hard, party harder. And then go to the mental hospital. Just work, and then instead of relaxing, when you get a little time, instead of relaxing, go on more intensely, partying, and then have a nervous breakdown and end up in the mental hospital. It's not just the pressure of working. The pressure of working is one thing, and the pressure of showing off is something else. So you have to show, I'm really cool, and I'm really with it, and I'm on top of the world, and I have no problems. But it's, everyone's got to show, cut a profile, but inside, people are free. So sometimes they just snap. And then all the money, they never saved any money, so their family's savings goes on the mental hospital fees. So, success. My success story. IIT graduate, HP professional, 2 years in the mental hospital, heart attack, Apollo hospital. These are all my success stories. So how to get peace? People are not even thinking of peace. Or they do a little so-called meditation in the morning. They go to this that rascal cheetah, what's his name? Shaviranka, something like that. Some guy grew a beard in Bangalore, talk a lot of nonsense and charge people a lot of money to go to his so-called meditation. And I didn't say, you said. I don't get the libel notice. But anyway, he's a cheetah. He's the most popular cheetah at the present time. Somehow he's become very popular. People think it's very prestigious to go to this rascal instead of some other rascal. He's the rascal cheetah for the sophisticated fools. And less sophisticated, they go to some other cheetah. There's so many cheetahs. I was just in Vellore, the big posters all over this town of some so-called Nityananda Paramahams. Huge pictures and little picture of Srinivas, Balaji. Deity is coming, but they're advertising this rascal instead. How do we know he's a rascal? Well, he's showing his picture bigger than Srinivas. So he wants to promote himself instead of promoting the Lord. So all these people go to them, they adulate them. But real position of a guru is to teach Bhagavad Gita as it is, in which Krishna is revealed as the supreme truth. But people are not interested in truth. People often ask, well, why are there so few people following your ISKCON? And so many people are following this and that. The reason is because people are, they want to be cheated. They don't want the truth. They're not sincere. The fact that people want to be cheated is proved by the advertising industry. The advertising industry could have no success. There wouldn't be an advertising industry if people did not want to be cheated. They know, you should know when you see an advertisement that you won't get what the advertisement promises. They show beautiful woman in sari, but by putting on the sari, you don't become beautiful. So you like to imagine like that. Or they show that if you use this toothpaste, then all beautiful women are smiling at you, but it doesn't happen. It's just cheating. But people like that. They're attached to illusion. They're attached to cheating. So they know it's not true, but they don't want to know what is the actual fact. So people like to be cheated. Some so-called guru comes and says, you come to our meditation session, some seminar, personality development, 2,000 rupees. You go and then you have some guru, you pay some, but there's no terms and conditions. You can know for sure that someone's a cheater if they teach you that this is a spiritual path, but you don't have to follow any rules. We say no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and people say no, thank you. And if you say, do what you like, whatever you like, whatever you think, everything's okay, and you just say om, and pay me 2,000 rupees, just say yes, very good. Because people want to be cheated. So, this teaching of Bhagavad Gita is for people who are sincere to know the truth. What is stated here? How to attain peace. Actually, the ultimate goal of life is not to attain peace, but that is a beginning platform. The ultimate goal of life is to fully surrender to Krishna. Unless the mind is somewhat peaceful, we cannot even begin to understand elevated topics. The mind is always agitated, then how can we begin to understand God? So if the mind should be somewhat peaceful, and the mind can become somewhat peaceful by understanding these three facts, three points are made here, Krishna says, how to attain peace. He says that one should understand Krishna as bhukta. He is the enjoyer. This is the big illusion of the material world, which is promoted so much in the modern age. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy. Eat, drink, sleep, be merry, and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. This is the unspoken philosophy of modern life. There is no philosophy as such. No one's even heard the word philosophy. But this is the mindset of the modern age, that we should enjoy ourselves as much as possible. Enjoy the senses. But actually we don't enjoy. Our capacity for enjoyment is very limited. What would you like to eat? Any idea? What would you like to eat? Down here it's idli dosa country. What's the special food on some special occasion? Jalebis? What would you like? Think of something you'd like to eat. You like sweets? Payasam? Okay, what if we give you one bucket of payasam? You like to eat that? This much? We have limited capacity. No matter how hungry we are or how greedy we are, the payasam, after a certain amount, in the beginning, and after a little, then after if you say no, 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 and then it becomes a torture. Payasam torture. Could you imagine? If you If you're forced, someone's had a gun at your head, you go on eating. It becomes a torture. So we have limited capacity to enjoy. And same thing, if you bring the best payasam made with nice ghee, and kesar, and kaju, kismis, all these things, but then every day, you're eating, every day they bring after something, then you're not interested. Bring something else. Bring some plain rice and sambar. It becomes boring. We have limited capacity to enjoy. And actually the more we try to enjoy, the less we enjoy. This whole modern life, this jump on a motorbike, with music, and where's the enjoyment? The more you try, sense enjoyment, it's like if you have some cloth full of water, you just squeeze a little bit, some water comes, and then if you squeeze some more, it becomes dry, and then even to get one drop, you have to squeeze hard. So like that, our bodies in use, we can very easily enjoy. The senses are very strong, but as you get older, it becomes like the cloth, all the water's gone out, and you try very hard, and you can't enjoy. Even when you're older, then the teeth, or even to eat food becomes difficult. Now you can enjoy, but in old age, you can't eat, and there's no appetite, and it gives you indigestion. So the ability to enjoy decreases. In youth, the sexual feeling is very strong, but if you indulge that, then all one's energy is lost. And in old age, you have to suffer so many diseases. So it's the mistake of material life that we are meant to enjoy. But everything should be offered for Krishna's enjoyment. Everything should be done for His pleasure. Bhuktaram yagyatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram. He is the Lord of all the planets. We want to do probes into space. You can probe as much as you like. Krishna is controlling everything. Krishna is the supreme controller. We're trying to enjoy this material world and we're trying to control. Technology is an attempt to utilize the material elements in a very gross way so that we can utilize material nature to facilitate our sense enjoyment. This is technology. But how much can we control? We can't control the tsunami. We can't control even the rain. We can't control our toothache. We can't control the aging process. You can try. You can do yoga or take vitamin E pills. That's very popular in the West. Vitamin E pills. And that's supposed to keep you younger. But anyway, the body gets older and older. We can't control. We think we can control. To a very limited extent, we can control. But just like you make this complex machine, an automobile, and we think now we're improving life. We can get from one place to another quicker. But actually you get caught in so many automobiles, you get caught in the traffic jam. You don't go any quicker. So many times it's quicker to walk than go by car. Last time I was in New York, he was saying, well, shall we walk or go by train? How far is it? 2 miles. That's a long way. Yeah, but I think we'll still go quicker if we walk. Because all is complete gridlock of cars. Quicker to walk. So we think we solve one problem, but we create another problem, and then Over 50,000 people a year die in America in road accidents. That's a lot of people, isn't it? After this 9/11, people, for some months, most people stopped using airplanes, which is a common means of transport in America, because it's a huge country and makes India look like a little village or something. So people fly around a lot, but then they started going by car. They thought it's safer because we won't get the terrorist attack. But then there was an increase in road accidents because of the increased use of cars, and they would have been safer to go by plane. So we think we're solving problems by technology, but it's not solving anything. It's the nature of the material world that it's full of problems. There's an example given in Srimad Bhagavatam that you have a heavy weight on your shoulder. So you think, what shall I do? It's too much. So what shall I do? Okay, take it off the shoulder. But then you have to carry it, so you put it on the other shoulder. So it's like that. Technology, it's not solving any problem, but it's shifting the weight from one shoulder to another. That's all. Or maybe making things worse also, because at least previously, fresh air, fresh drinking water, fresh food without pollution or chemicals, these were ordinary things which everybody got. Nowadays you can't get it. Very difficult to get fresh air. In the city, impossible. See, here we are in IIT, highly prestigious, and the stink from the drain is coming. You probably don't notice. You're inured to it. But I noticed. The stool smell is coming. And fresh drinking water, it practically doesn't exist. If you go in the mountains, maybe you can get it. Otherwise, all the water is polluted. Even if you dig it up from the earth, it's all polluted. So much pollution in the soil. Fresh food, forget it. No way. You have to bring it in from the village to the city. By the time you've purchased it and brought it home, it's never going to be fresh. And it's all full of chemicals and pollution. So even ordinary things we can't get. Even the ordinary basic things, fresh food, fresh water, fresh air, you can't get. So is it an advantage? Is modern society has it actually helped? Has it furthered the cause of human civilization? Doubtful. So this whole economic, technological rush to develop, it's all based on ignorance of the principle of the real purpose of human life, which is to understand that there is a supreme controller, a supreme enjoyer. We are not the enjoyers, we are not the controllers. And Krishna is the supreme friend of all living beings. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. This should be understood, that Krishna is our friend, and he's not only our friend, he's the friend of all living beings. So we have no right to slaughter animals for the pleasure of our tongue. This is sinful. We should know. If we know these things, we can attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. It's actually very simple. The absolute truth, or the knowledge of the absolute truth, is there are many complex points, but the basic principles are simple. That's true in any field. Mathematics, the basic principles are simple, but if you get into it, it's complex. And the brilliant mathematician is one who can find the simplicity in the complexity. Einstein, E equals MC squared. So many scientists are looking at the same phenomena, and he found the formula. But he didn't find this formula. That's a much higher principle. Bhaktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatva mang shantim richati. is a formula beyond Einstein's research power. Same basic, Einstein, for all his brilliance, made the same mistake as everyone in the material world of putting too much stress or too much importance on his own mental capacity. This IIT, they should make the symbol a frog. Inside this IIT is going on frog philosophy. In Sanskrit I'm called Kupamandukanyai. The philosophy of the understanding of the frog in the well. The anecdote is given that there was a traveling frog. He liked to travel here and there. So he came from the ocean and he visited one well in which one frog was living in the well. So the frog who'd been outside in the big wide world said, "I saw the ocean." So the well frog said, "Well, what is the ocean?" He said, "It's a huge body of water." So the frog in the well, he only knows his own well. He's never saw beyond that. He has no capacity to imagine anything beyond that. So he said, "It's a big body of water. How big is it?" "Twice as big as my well?" "No." "Three times as big?" "No, much, much bigger." 100 times as big?" "No, no, far bigger." "Then I can't believe. How can there be? I'm highly learned, Dr. Frog, PhD. I know everything about this well, how to catch insects, how to jump in the mud. So I'm an expert. I'm the most respected frog in the whole frog community here." So it was beyond his power to imagine anything beyond his well. And therefore, he decried even the concept that there can be an ocean, because his experience of water is only that which he sees in the well. So the whole endeavor to attain knowledge or to improve human society only with respect to the material condition and using our highly limited mental capacities. This is frog philosophy. Dr. Frog. To go beyond that, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Those who are intelligent will accept it, and those who are unintelligent but think that they are intelligent because they have some mental capacity, they will not accept it. People don't know what intelligence means. They think that intelligence means the ability to grasp various concepts and manipulate the material energy thereby, and to try to understand how everything is going on. But more intelligent, a higher level of intelligence, even if one's brain functions are not so developed as, just like I'm sure, and I'm sure you're all sure too, that in terms of what we could call the scientific method, you're all more intelligent than me. I'm not a science scholar, nor are you actually. I mean, you're just beginners. It's in a small area. But anyway, you're definitely more intelligent than me in all these things. But more intelligent, higher intelligence is to see that beyond this material way of thinking and analyzing this material world and attempting to manipulate this material energy, There are bigger questions, more important subject matters even to look at. If one is expert in manipulating the material energy, that is not a sign of very high intelligence, because in some ways the bees and the ants are more advanced than human society. We'd have a hard job to make a beehive. Anyone ever made a beehive? What about making milk? In that way, the cow is more advanced than us. Then what about flying? We have to make some big arrangement to make a plane or a helicopter. But the birds, they don't even think. So in that way, they're more developed. But real intelligence means to see that for all our endeavors to manipulate this material world, we have to suffer. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshana. So real intelligence is to think that, to understand that I want to be happy, but in this material world, everything that we take as causes of happiness, that produces distress in this lifetime also. Even the people who think they're happy, they're suffering so much distress. And certainly we have to suffer death, old age, disease. From Shastra we can understand there is rebirth also. So how to get free from suffering? And to understand that behind this whole cosmic organization there is orchestration. There's no orchestra without orchestration. Studying the material world, scientific laws, there's no laws without a lawmaker. It's a simple principle to understand, but because of atheistic education, we get our brains filled with so much misinformation, and somehow or other we think that there's no God in control, which is foolishness. Even a child can understand it. Just like this, you see, there's light arrangement here. So it didn't happen by chance. Some human intelligence with some purpose, the lights were set up, or the fact that there is light, electric light supply, means there's so much human endeavor and intelligence behind that. So to say that the whole universe with all its incredible complexity is just coming into being by chance with no purpose is foolishness. But somehow or other, people think that it's very intelligent to presume that there is no God in control. So this principle that Krishna is speaking, it's a simple point to understand. There is God, He is the enjoyer, He is the controller, He is the friend of all living beings. And what else is He? He's Krishna. He's not just someone that we don't know, but He is Krishna. He is a person who we can know. God means He's the controller, He's the enjoyer, He's the friend. It means He's a person. Then who is He? The answer is Krishna. That is clear from all the Vedic literature in Bhagavad Gita. Vedaischa sarvam aham eva vedyah. Krishna is the goal of knowledge in the Vedas. What else? Matah parataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. There is no truth. There's nothing superior to me, Krishna says. Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Everything is generated by me. Matas sarvam pravartate. From me everything comes. So it's from Krishna. It's not some idea or concept or undefined or unknowable God. If He's the supreme controller, and to think there is no supreme controller is foolishness, then He's a person. And who is that person? That is Krishna. This is the message of Bhagavad Gita. So, how to get peace if we understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Now, we may say, well, people are fighting because of religion. In India, there has been, and it can flare up at any time, tension between Hindus and Muslims. And in Pakistan, it's between Muslims and Muslims. And increasingly, it seems that the Western world, which is at least nominally Christian, is pitting itself against the Islamic world. And then, we have also in Northern Ireland, where my mother's from, for one whole generation, for about 30 years, there was fighting between Protestants and Catholics, not actually about religion. It's not anything to do with God, but in the name of religion, people form in social groups, which they, because of the nature of the material world, they form enmity between themselves. So, if people actually understood this principle of that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, then there's no need for so-called religious fighting. Religious fighting is only due to ignorance and non-acceptance, it's actually irreligious. There's no such thing as religious fighting. Well, there is Arjuna's fighting on Krishna's order. But in the name of religion, to break your religion is wrong, I'll kill you. If you don't accept this, we'll kill you. So this is due to ignorance of who that person is and what he wants from us. That simply by killing people, it doesn't help them to understand Krishna. So what is the use of killing them? Of course, Krishna is telling Arjuna to fight. That's for another reason. So religion doesn't cause war, but misunderstanding of religion. Or religious feelings on a very low level. On a low level, tamasic, religion influenced by tamagun, then because tamagun, people are violent. So one thinks that one has to kill in the name of religion. But if one actually understands that Krishna is the supreme friend of all living beings, that love is the highest principle, and that love is not vague or ill-defined, that love means that we have to offer everything to Krishna. Materialistic religion, they think love of God means that you say some prayers and He gives you everything that you want for your sense gratification, all your material fulfillments. But real love means to understand that I don't need anything, I don't want anything of this material world. So, even if He takes everything away, anyway, it wasn't mine in the first place, because nothing belongs to me. So if He takes everything away, that's His mercy to make me detach from this world. I belong to Him. Let me serve Him in any capacity. And one who has that sense of doing everything for the service of the Lord, Krishna might give so many things. Sudama Vipra, here in South India they call Kuchala. I don't know where that name came from, but in Bhagavatam, the name is given Sudama. So he was very poor, but he was happy remembering Krishna. So his wife sent him, you go, Krishna's a big king now. You were together at school as brahmacharis. As brahmacharis, they're living very simply together. Later, Sudama became a brahmana and became His position was, he was very poor. And Krishna, so rich. Of course, Krishna is Lakshmipati. So he's always rich. He didn't have to do trading in the stock exchange to become rich. And he's not, as some rascal has proposed, Daridra Narayana. There's another rascal idea. Narayana is never Daridra. He's Lakshmipati. People are praying to Lakshmi, Dhanam Dehi. And Krishna, he's not even concerned about Dhanam, because he's anyway the master of everything. Everything belongs to him. So Sudama Vipra went, and he went to see Krishna, and he was just very happy to see Krishna. He didn't ask him for anything. He forgot, because he was just so happy to see Krishna. And he remembered that in Bhagavad Gita, patrang pushpang palang tayang, one has to bring something to offer Krishna with bhakti. So he brought some rough rice, which he had begged, and he offered to Krishna with bhakti. And Krishna, oh, very nice, very nice. Let me take more. But Rukmini, who is Lakshmi, she stopped and said, don't take more. It's not fit for you. By your satisfaction with this, this is enough to assure all happiness eternally. So he left, and he was walking back to Sudamapuri, nowadays known as Porbandar. It's about 150 kilometers from Dwarka, as it's the present town of Dwarka. So as he was walking back, you see, oh, how wonderful is Krishna. So wonderful. I'm so happy to see him. He loves his devotees so much. He knows that I'm a materialistic rascal, and that if I had got any opulence from him, I would have simply become more and more materialistic. So he's so kind, he didn't give me anything. If a brahmana goes to a king should, even without asking, he should give him something. Or he should just say, what do you want? He say, what do you want? He doesn't give any condition. What do you want? It's a king, that's a king, he has to give. That's a real, to a real brahmana. So Sudamata, he was so kind, he didn't give me anything. He knew that if I remain poor, then I'll be unattached. So then he came and he saw, where's my home? What happened? There's some big palace here. What happened to my home? Krishna's so kind, I had a little hut and now that's gone too. Someone built a big palace. All right. And his wife came. I didn't recognize her at first, because instead of her tattered sari, she was dressed in nice clothes, looking a little bit healthy. Said, oh, Krishna sent this. All right. Okay. Whatever Krishna wants. So he lived in opulence and used that opulence to serve Krishna. So devotee is not attached to this material world. And he's not attached to being detached either. I mean, his detachment is that he's not attached to living in poverty. If Krishna sends opulence, he can use it for Krishna's service, but not for his own sense enjoyment. So in this way, one can live in this world, either in opulence or poverty, or one may be materially, what's considered materially well-educated or not so, but these are not criteria for bhakti. Criteria, or the criterion, is to understand Krishna, he is the supreme controller, enjoyer, and friend. And to act in that capacity is called bhakti. So, all this big education you're getting, is that an advantage for bhakti or not? What do you think? I think it's a disadvantage, actually, because you know, if we go among all the students, if you have to explain everything in a big scientific way and give example, and then they say, oh, very good. But actually, this science has got nothing to do. It's because you nothing to do with bhakti. You may use that just to demonstrate some principle to people who are enamored by that. But the fact that you're enamored by that is another kind of misfortune, because you put such emphasis on the material energy and material education and material intelligence, which is actually a block to put importance on these things, is a block in understanding Krishna as the Supreme Person. So we have to go among so-called educated people, we have to go in a roundabout way, and I haven't done so today. You have to explain so many things about science, and then, oh, okay, that's very important. But Krishna, his importance has got nothing to do with what you think is important, or what people who are material educated, his importance transcends that. And this science, what we call it, means that we have a very, 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 very little knowledge about very, very, very little about what's going on in this world. And the really important thing, which is to understand Krishna, science can't even come, by its very methodology, cannot even begin to approach. But because we live in an age of sophisticated foolishness, therefore people think this is very important. So anyway, there's hope for you also, despite your education. You can also take to Krishna consciousness. Understand Krishna through Bhagavad Gita as it is, that he is the supreme controller, the supreme friend, the supreme enjoyer, and life should be lived with that understanding. Then one can attain peace, and beyond peace, one can attain pure devotional service to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Are there any questions about this? Eureka. It happened to you. People in India don't sit in bathtubs. That's a Yavana propensity. Yavan means the Greeks. The original term means the Greeks. So, when they take a bath, they're sitting in the bathtub. Eureka. You know that, right? How the term Eureka came? That was one of the famous Greek... Who was that? Archimedes. He was sitting in his bathtub. And that's how so many scientific breakthroughs come. When the scientists are the... They're thinking and thinking and thinking about some problem, and then they can't get it. And then when they're not thinking about, comes. What's that? That's Paramatma. He says, this rascal is trying so hard. Okay, give it to them. So, then they get a Nobel Prize. But Archimedes didn't get. Well, he's famous among other Yavanas. Actually, all this mathematics, everything, it's already there. Vedic mathematics. Everything is there. Geometry, trigonometry. All the words are there. I don't know the words, but there's sine, cosine. All these words are there in Sanskrit. Trikon is the word for triangle. Three corners. Paramanu, the word is there for atom. So it was all known, but that knowledge has become lost now. Lost or almost lost. So, there's a great culture, Vedic culture. Nowadays they're building buildings out of this cement and marbonite all over Chennai. There's advertisements for marbonite. But see how they built temples in the past. How well constructed they were. During that super cyclone in Orissa, all the buildings on the coast were blown down, but all the old temples, they stood. No damage to them. They withstood the worst that nature could send. So people don't know how to build such things nowadays. The pyramids in Egypt, they have no idea how they build such things. They can't imagine how they did. They must have had some technology which we're not aware of. In the present day, there's no cement. The blocks are put together so perfectly that they're standing, that withstanding that harsh climate. for such a long time. So there's so much knowledge that the ancient world had. But we're proud of building our cement and steel buildings, which don't last. Even in a short time, they look terrible, isn't it? After 3-4 monsoons, they look terrible. Whereas the old buildings, they're standing so many years. Still very nice. We're proud. We are doing better. So, modern man should become a little humble, actually. And admit that for all our technological development, human society is just one big mess. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. So the whole idea that we shall improve human society by technological development is a proven failure. It's not at all improved. So people should come to a higher platform. There's no material solution to the material problem. This George Bush Jr. thought he would solve the Saddam Hussein problem and the terrorism problem by attacking Iraq, but they've made the capacity for terrorism is increased more. They themselves are admitting. There's no solution. What's the solution to all this pollution of petrol? Well, years ago, they invented cars that can run on clean fuel. And General Motors bought the patent, so you can't produce it. You can run cars on potato fuel, much cleaner, on vegetable oil, cheaper, cleaner, but the oil companies are making money, polluting the world. So, this cheating others, this is the main principle of modern life. Politics means cheating. Business means cheating. Just religion is cheating. Like I was saying, this Shavirankar and all these so-called Kalki avatar ran away from Tamil Nadu. Now everyone forgot him because there's always some new bogus avatar coming. So every 5 or 6 years. So many bogus avatars, one after the other, one after the other. But the real Supreme Lord is Krishna, and He stays. I was just in Vellore, they told me that 30 years ago there was one very popular Swami from there, Kripa or something. Nowadays no one even heard of him. At that time he was very popular, now forgotten. So all these so-called avatars, they come and they go and people forget. When I was young in the West, among the Indian so-called spiritual teachers, the Meher Baba and who is that? Bala Yogeshwar and who else was that? That Maharishi or Maharishi Transcendental Meditation. They were popular. Now they're forgotten. There's other ones now. Before that, the generation before that, there was Krishnamurti and Paramahamsa Yogananda. These things come and go. But Prabhupada went to the West. He didn't promote Bhaktivedanta Swami. Come and worship me. He promoted Krishna. He is the eternal, supreme truth. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajambhu. Krishna is the supreme truth. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. He is the supreme abode. Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. You, Arjuna, told Krishna. You are the supreme pure. You are Purusham Shashvatam. You are the eternal person. Divyam. Ever resplendent. Adi Devam. The origin of all the demigods. Ajam, unborn, Vibhum, all powerful. So this is true of Krishna. It was true when Arjuna said it. It was true even millions of years before that. It's true now and it will continue to be true. And all these so-called swamis, gurus, for a few days they show very popular, very big, and then they have to become a worm in stool for their offense of promoting themselves instead of promoting Krishna. So don't be cheated. Understand reality as it is. Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. If you can transcend the handicap of your materialistic education and understand parastasmatu bhava no vyakto vyaktat sanatana, beyond this material world where everything is created and destroyed again, there is the transcendent world. That will be your actual good fortune. So, don't be discouraged because you've had this demoniac and foolish education. Despite it, you can also become Krishna conscious. Yeah.
So, peace is different from happy and anger?
Yeah, peace is the substratum of happiness. There's no happiness without peace. And we find that, don't we? We see that people have money, they have prestige, fame, and still they're not happy. Because they're not peaceful in mind. So it's the substratum on which happiness can develop.
In Satyuga, the process of Dhyan Yoga is repeated. And then in Treta Yuga, I think performance of sacrifices and the Dwapara Yuga, they say worship of deities is recommended. If Krishna is supreme truth, then why the worship of Krishna was not popular in those ages?
Why wasn't the worship of Krishna popular? Well, it was popular. What makes you think it wasn't?
In the form of Krishna, it was popular in the form of Vishnu.
No, dhyana means dhyana avastita tadgateena manasa, meditation on Vishnu. Krite yadhyayato Vishnum. Krita yoga is another name for Satya yoga. So dhyayato Vishnum. The dhyan was on Vishnu. Because all these cheetahs have come and taught, meditation means you just think of some void. But meditation means to meditate on Vishnu. And Tretayam yajato makha. In Treta yoga, makha means, is another name for yajna. So the yajna that's performed, understanding that yajna pati is Vishnu, yajna book, or yajna itself is another name for Vishnu. So it's not that Vishnu bhakti was unknown in other ages. Krishna bhakti, that is there always side by side with Vishnu bhakti. Krishna and Vishnu are non-different. It's not that Krishna was unknown before he appeared in Dwarpa Yoga. We see the, well, Krishna himself, that, first verse of the fourth chapter, aham vaishvana robo, aham vivasvate yogam proktavana aham avyayam, vivasvana nave praha manurikshvaka ve bravid. Krishna says, I spoke this knowledge to Vivasvan, the sun god, who spoke it to his son, Manu, who spoke it to Ikshvaku, and in this way it ended human society. So knowledge of Krishna was there. We find Prahlad Maharaj speaking to Hiranyakashipu, Matiyana Krishne Haratasvatova. He was speaking of Krishna. So Krishna was known. It's not that Krishna was unknown. But there are various Vishnu forms, and in Vishnu bhakti, some devotees are more attracted to worship Vishnu as Lakshmi Narayana, some as Sitaram, some as Krishna, Bal Gopal Krishna, some as Rukmini Krishna, some as Radha Krishna. So it's the same Supreme Lord, but also there are worshippers of Kurumadev. There's one Kuruma temple at near to Srikakulam in Andhra Pradesh. So like that, various forms of the Lord are worshipped. It's not something that just happened recently. It's always there. Anything else? So you said how to worship in other ages, and how to worship in Kali Yuga. Krite yadhyayato vishnam, tretayam yajato makai, dwapare paricharyaryam, in dwarpa yoga by paricharya, which means archan, and kalotad hari kirtanat, in kali yoga by hari kirtan. So, it's time for practical. We had